Midway through my first year in seminary, my school gave me an incredible gift. They nominated me for a highly competitive fellowship for first-year seminarians. It was a national fellowship. And if ultimately selected, it would put me in a cohort with other first-year seminarians. They're all across the country, to attend two 10-day-long retreats on congregational leadership, plus receive a bunch of money, which, you know, it's all relative, but even in now I look back in seminary, it still is a bunch of money, to take up any burning question that we had about contemporary congregational life and the role of the church pastor. The fellowship's goal was to encourage more young people to become pastors in the local church. And as you might discern from the language that I'm using, it was a Christian-based fellowship. And so going into it, I was skeptical that I had any chance of actually being chosen. Not only was I not Christian, but I was gay. And it was 2008, which, if you remember, in 2008, not even Obama was sure that there should be GLBT equality. But the money sounded awesome. And the basic premise was exciting, and I figured, well, my seminary knew who I was, and they nominated me, so I figured, why not apply? See what happens. So the application required an essay describing my answer to a deceptively simple question. Why should the church exist today? What is its core purpose? Which is actually not all that simple once you go to try to answer it. For anybody, but especially tough for me at that time because my most honest answer was a sure-to-be loser that I'd summarize as, I'm not sure it should. I was pretty clear I couldn't write that. But see, in my first year of seminary, though I know I was in seminary, I still wasn't convinced about church. And so much of my experience, after all, church had been destructive, divisive, and filled with make-believe or hypocrisy or irrelevancy. So I sometimes thought, we who believe in the goodness of humanity and who strive for freedom and justice, maybe we shouldn't be justifying the existence of church. We should be dismantling it, or at the very least, ignoring it. But the question, and then this nomination from my seminary, it pushed me to ask myself, in all seriousness, if there is to be a thing called a church, if such a thing is a given, what should its purpose be? Its unique purpose for today, in this world, for real. It was nearly a decade ago, but I still remember viscerally the power that this question and the process of answering it had on me. It was as if a giant block of resistance that had been growing inside me, what I thought of as kind of cynicism or general dissatisfaction about church, but what was probably better understood as heartbreak, it was like it took that and it magically transformed instead into a ball of energy, creativity, and imagination for the church as it could or should be. In place of fear or resistance, I discovered inside me a new well of hope and even yearning. It stirred up a dream inside me that I didn't even know I had. It was a huge gift. And yet I have come to realize that the organization was not as uniquely brilliant in asking that question as I had originally thought. See, the question is actually at the heart of the earliest writings of the Christian scripture, what you probably know as Paul's letters. And this question is, as well as the sort of dissatisfaction, aka heartbreak that I held, has been the energizing force for nearly all of the churches major moments of reform and revitalization, also known as the history of Protestantism. Now I know, we sometimes play coy, but since we are covering the basics of Unitarian Universalism, let's be clear. We are a Protestant faith. Just so Protestant, we protested ourselves right out of the tradition. We're like, as Protestant as it gets. But still, the voices and people, many of whom Parker mentions in the reading Sean offered, all of these great reformers of the Protestant church who kept seeing the church as not yet what it could be, and then setting a course for creating something better and truer, these are our people. We are a church of constant reform, and even sometimes when we're courageous, a church of revolution, and when we're grounded, a church of revolutionary love. Our faith is fueled by that bright light where heartbreak breaks open into creative possibility, that ongoing invitation to discover and rediscover our living answer to that great question that fellowship posed to me, if there is to be a place whose business it is to care about the most important everything, that is to say, if there's to be such a thing as a church, what should its purpose be for today? Officially, Unitarian Universalism's drive towards constant reform and openness to new understandings of truth is what we call our living tradition. It is not unique to us to identify ours as an open tradition. The UCC Church has that great tagline. You might have seen it on a t-shirt or somewhere in a magazine about don't put a period where God put a comma. A great tagline. But we may be the most explicitly open in our tradition, or maybe better phrased, the most insistently living. We are a church of questions, which doesn't mean, as one of our hymns puts it, to question is an answer. For as my colleague, the Reverend Mike Moran, has been known to say, no, to question is not an answer. An answer is an answer. So more accurately, I would encourage us to think with it about the fact that we are a church that practices a holy curiosity about each other or about ourselves, about the hills and valleys, bugs and beasts of this earth, and all the many tales of the human heart. And especially how all of this somehow miraculously and mysteriously fits together in that great big everything. We are a church of wonder and awe at all the amazing mysteries. And we are a church that refuses to close the door on any possible discoveries that may yet be revealed or ways of making meaning along the way. To put it in that more traditional frame that Rebecca Parker uses, we affirm that revelation is not sealed, cannot be sealed. And as we say at the beginning of each service, we know that each of us holds a piece of the truth. And in our encounter with one another, even if we do not agree, we are changed. And in that changing, we experience something closer to truth with a capital T, something more akin to beauty in its truest sense and more fully aligned with that divine spark at the heart of the universe that some call God. The shadow side to this openness and orientation to constant reform, however, is our great and common risk for amnesia about our religious inheritance and the tradition part of the living tradition, which at its worst becomes an immature or even arrogant rejection of our history entirely, like a perpetual religious teenager. One of the reasons that we're spending a few Sundays on the basics of Unitarian Universalism is because we're determined to avoid that temptation, to be a church of religious grown-ups, or at least try to be, and instead claim ourselves as recipients of a gift that we have inherited, a gift we're first responsible to understand and then required to ask of it, as Parker invites, what shall we do with this gift? This religious inheritance and our living tradition does not mean, however, that we have anything officially we'd call doctrine. Actually, I remember in my seminary, there were some of my fellow students, they were Methodists or Lutherans, and they were looking at what they were required to take, and they had like a whole track on doctrine of their church. And I asked one of my friends, oh, wait, do we need to do, is there anything like that? No. There's no class called UU Doctrine in seminary. But one version of the covenant that we say on every Sunday instead goes, love is the doctrine of this church. And some Unitarian Universalists, I'd count myself among them, advocate that we consider covenant as our church's doctrine. Doctrine, after all, simply means teaching. Now, there was a rumor I heard recently that when I started at this church a while ago, that some people wanted to start a sermon bingo game, maybe even had a sermon bingo game, like with cards, you know, during the sermon, and you'd mark it off, except for all of the squares on your cards all said covenant. Because apparently I said the word covenant a lot in the beginning. Now, this rumor may or may not be true, but the fact that I say it a lot surely is. Covenant is, after all, Unitarian Universalism's embodiment of our living tradition. It's the way that we make space for each other and all of our evolving diversity while still creating a common bond. That bond is made up not of common beliefs, but in common promises. The promises that we make to serve that greatest, highest good. We are, as the Jewish theologian Martin Buber puts it, promise-making, promise-breaking, and promise-renewing people. Now, the promise-breaking part of that statement, it's not something that we talk about as much when we talk about our covenantal tradition, but it is an implicit part of the covenantal way, because our covenant binds us to our highest ideals. And so we know going in, we're going to fall short. We're going to disappoint ourselves and each other, which means that confession and forgiveness should be a regular part of our communal practice. Although I say should be, because confession and forgiveness haven't actually been all that much a part of our communal practice. So it's something, like with everything else in Unitarian Universalism, that we'd say is in development. Our covenantal tradition does come to us by way of those feisty Puritans, although, let's be clear, they're not quite as freedom-loving as the way Rebecca Parker describes them in that sermon. We'll save that for another, or in the reading, and we'll save that for another sermon Sean absolutely wants to give. So the pilgrims, as they became clear on their answer to what the church's purpose was in their time and place and how that needed to look, it brought them to this idea of the covenant. As they arrived in New England, they spent some time talking to each other, a lot of time, on this important and transformative question, holding small groups and gatherings at home, listening carefully to each other and to the spirit of life itself. The answers that they discerned in those long and careful conversations led them not to new or unorthodox theological conclusions. They were straight up Calvinists, and they surely would have totally rejected the theological diversity of today's Unitarian Universalism. But it did lead them to a completely new understanding of how churches should be run, how they should be structured, what became known as congregational polity or the covenantal way. Congregational polity, just like the name sounds, now polity, everybody kind of know that word? It's a weird word, but it means it's like governance. It's the way that it's run. So congregational polity, as the name implies, it rejects the idea of churches being run somewhere other than the congregation itself. It rejects any kind of hierarchy or outside doctrinal requirements in favor of a gathered community such as this. It says the highest truth, the living spirit, is possible in a community that comes together and promises of mutual trust and support. And then something is created there. And that's the best place for new truth to be revealed. So these gathered communities, in turn, they realized, needed to be gathered in covenant with other communities in a lateral relationship so that they could do more than just any one community could do on its own. Certainly, you could not achieve that big vision that they stated in their answer to those transformative questions with just one little community. You need a lot of them, all in relationship and in covenant with each other. Today, our congregation remains dedicated to this way of being a church so that membership at Foothills or any other congregational church does not mean assenting to a list of beliefs or agreeing to a set of prayers or practices. Sean gave you lots of options of what kind of ways you might want to pray. You can even come up with your own. But rather, it is about making a promise to this religious community and to co-create its very existence through our presence, care, service, discernment, support, and growth. As a congregational church, we are entirely self-governing, which means our congregationally elected board of trustees are church members who, in partnership with the ministers, work with this congregation to discern the big and small ways that we today will answer that question of the purpose of the church for this time and place, what we have called the call of courageous love. Now, as with our religious ancestors, not only do individuals covenant, but congregations as well, so with other congregations, which is institutionally embodied in the Unitarian Universalist Association, but is made real for congregations like ours in the ways that we're in relationship with other Unitarian Universalist congregations, especially those ones nearby. So, for example, anybody know when I say the word Namaqua, I might be talking about another UU church? Okay, now y'all know. So that's the church in Loveland, who actually about... Maybe somebody can get my facts straight, but I think it's about 14 years ago, 15 years ago, members of this church decided that it seemed like it might be good to begin to gather in Loveland, because some people were living in Loveland, and we actually helped to form and seed that congregation, and we have a really strong relationship with that congregation there in Loveland. But there's other Unitarian Universalist congregations around, and it is part of our covenant that we think about how we are in mutual trust and support and relationship, not just with this congregation, but with the other congregations that are nearby, because we know we cannot do the great big vision all on our own. Now, all of this covenant is embodied in something you might have heard of called the seven principles. Yes? These principles are usually, however, thought of not as like covenants or congregation to congregation promises, but rather individual personalized promises. But actually, they are the promises that we make to other congregations when we say, what are we up to together? So as it goes, you can read it. It's over the water fountain out there. So all of you, go get a drink of water after the service. I know it's hot. So you can go get a drink of water after the hot service and read the full text out there. But it starts like this. We, the member associations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and so on. There's five others. And then it ends, after all those, as free congregations, we enter into this covenant, promising to one another our mutual trust and support. The Unitarian Universalist Association does a few things for our congregations that we realize we can't do so well on our own, things like ministerial credentialing. But it does not do one important thing that remains a sacred right of our congregations, which is selecting and calling for ministers. So that when this church called me in November of 2015, no bishop or cardinal sent me or mandated that. There was a democratically elected search committee made up of church members, and church members voted on that call right here in this room. In doing so, I'd like to remind you now, if you weren't clear, that you were not calling someone to impart theological truths requiring your assent. Sorry. That's what you were looking for. That's not what you did. Because ministers in our tradition are not understood to have a special revelation. We try, but... only a special calling. So in our faith, we are all ministers, partnering in our shared ministry and promising one another our mutual support and accountability, charged with co-discovering and then co-creating truth and beauty in that greatest possible sense. So that when we say we are all in this together, it's not just a theological orientation. It is also the literal way that we do church. There is no they or them in Unitarian Universalism. It is all we, and us. Each of us with particular roles, responsibilities, and callings. And yet it does take all of us to make this church what it is or isn't, and what it longs to be, what we long for it to be. So, why should the church exist today? What is its core purpose? Why should this gift we have inherited continue? And what shall we do with this gift? It is our great privilege that we, us, all of us, get to answer this question, and to do so in a community such as this, filled with joy and humor and grace, surrounded by all this beauty. What a miracle it is that we have this power, this possibility still to be transformed in the answering, and even more so in the making it so. This is our holy church, and for it we give thanks. Amen. Amen. Blessed be.